Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. It's great to see you again, all your smiling faces, and hopefully we're all completely overstuffed. I'm recording this the day after Thanksgiving, but this isn't a show about Thanksgiving. This is a show about the ideas behind society and the holidays that we make. But we'll talk about Thanksgiving for a little bit on the front, just because it's relevant and it's right there. It's Friday morning, Black Friday. I always forget about Black Friday up until I read about it online. So if anybody out there happened to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning in that sort of warfare, good luck to you. Hope you're safe and healthy. But my history with Thanksgiving is long. As a child, I was always bound to my family with my dad. There were several times during my teenage years where I did not have Thanksgiving with my father, which, you know, there's like I'd have it with my buddy's mothers, well, and my friends, of course, not just their moms. But I was always kind of like an orphan of Thanksgivings, I felt often. My memory's pretty shady, so I'm not blaming my dad. But, you know, even recently in the past couple years, my close family will have their own things going on outside of the state. Like my father just got back from Europe working on a whole bunch of crazy bachelor stuff. They're doing all kinds of like engagement shots or something for The Bachelor. And he went to like 8 different countries in 2 months and he was just completely beat. And he got home yesterday morning at 1 o'clock in the morning. And then him and my mother flew out at 6:30 to go to California to go have Thanksgiving with the family. Ouch. I can't imagine how tired he is even right now, even after a full night's of sleep. But so, you know, yesterday me and my son, we found a Thanksgiving to go to, and we went to my buddy's Thanksgiving, and, you know, I made a green bean casserole. I've never made casserole. I'm a cook by trade, but I like to cook larger segments of meat and much less soupy, container-y cooking. That's not what I do. But I made it happen, and I think I did a decent job. I think I did a little bit too many French onions for my taste personally, but it was good. We had sweet potatoes and we had a delicious cobbler pie. And then we had, you know, really good turkey. I prefer the dark meat. You know, what do you like? Do you like the dark meat or do you like the light meat more? There's biscuits, of course, and stuffing and cranberry sauce. My buddy's grandma made a fresh cranberry sauce that was just absolutely delightful. My point is that me and my son had a great time with great food, with a great family. And I've never yet to have a Thanksgiving alone. And I think that's one of the biggest parts about this holiday is the community around it. At least in the modern context, you know, it's about being around your family. It's about being around your loved ones and the ones that are close to you. And the gratitude of one's circumstances and one's environment includes one's loved ones. You know, we are intrinsically part of our environment. So I'm grateful for my day yesterday. And today we are discussing. We are discussing gratitude. We're discussing gratefulness and we're discussing thankfulness. We're looking at all these words separately. And hopefully we can figure out whether they're synonyms or if they're purely just relatives. To start, I want to go into some historical sort of back text for this. The standard perspective, which is what I remember hearing, especially in the South, you know, or you see all these cartoons when we're children where you have the pilgrims and then the happy Native Americans and everybody's smiling and eating dinner together. And Thanksgiving seems to be this holiday based around unity of two different cultures. At least that's how I saw it as a child, was that, you know, the white man might have been evil in a lot of ways and came over and conquested, but we seem to have come together at some point, at least for a day. And looking into the history now more, and of course, I didn't look that deep. I never do too much research, so you can bastardize me if you want. I just want to give a little bit of back text, and then you can go research more if you're curious, and I would love for you to let me know if you have any new information or if I was wrong. I would love to help have you help me help you, and we can build this information bubble, and we can make it bigger. But anyways, you can always email me. I have my email, my very, very long email address, the Gingerbread Man's Dialogues. It's hotkeyed in a clickable clicker thingy in the bottom of my, what do you call that thing? Description for the podcast. I don't know. I hope, hopefully you can find it. If not, you can find me, on the Gingerbread Man's Dialogues on Facebook. I'll try to put all these links down there, so it'll be really easy to find. And let's communicate, and you can help prove me wrong. I would love you to do that for me. So anyways, I always saw this bright and shiny sort of atmosphere based around it. So I went to this website called dosomething.org, which is a very hardcore pro-native, looking at how the history was mutated and misdisplayed. So there's not a lot of information based around this time period. So the Thanksgiving celebration is supposed to have started in 1621. And I think it was, I didn't write down where it was from, of course I didn't. But so it was started by not many people, not many different types of settlers. I think it was one, yeah, I'm butchering this, I'm sorry. But anyways, so 1621, after harvest, these new settlers have a Thanksgiving sort of celebration over harvest and over having food and over having survived. During the celebration, they were noted to have shot off firearms, fireworks, just like ceremoniously, you know? And the firearm shots alerted and bothered the local native population that was living close to these settlers. And so a group of 90 men showed up, and these were the ones who were mentioned in the very few reports from this time that a lot of this cultural idea was built upon. So the 90 that showed up weren't even invited. The 90 that showed up were warriors responding to an apparent threat. It's also not clear that they were given any food. Most likely the people who did show up were robbed for their own winter resources. So this isn't much of a Thanksgiving according to this viewpoint. This is a thanks taking, you know. And then after the initial Thanksgiving debacle, you know, there were several other accounts of mass slaughters after 1621 and 1636, and in like I think it was like 1620 something, where hundreds of people were killed. You know, shortly after the settlers arrived, alliances were set up between the native populations and the native settlers. But most of these were coerced, and it was because the native populations were very sick and struggling. And it was a survival thing because they were unable to fight because they were so sick that they made an alliance with the grossly over technical forces of the settlers who had moved in. You know, so not a very cheery or colorful, fun time. It's nothing like the cartoons that I witnessed when I was younger. And it's nothing like the idea that I had in my head. And if I'm not putting my opinion one way or another, but I feel that I want to trust this dosomething.org a little bit more than I've trusted the other perspectives that have been fed throughout school. So what do I think before we end off on Thanksgiving and get rid of the holiday shit and go more into ideas, which is my playground that I enjoy much more? My perspective, I love Thanksgiving. I don't think about the historical context that much of it. It's probably my favorite holiday, hands down. And I'm not even being pandering. I'm not exaggerating, I think I like Thanksgiving a little bit more than Christmas. And mostly this is because on a good year, like last year when Thanksgiving rolled around, I spent probably 4 or 5 hours personally typing out messages to as many people as I could think of to express gratitude for their existence. And I would personally try to think about times when they had been amazing to me. And I tried to point it out and be like, hey, this is why I think you're such an amazing person. And I'd spend a lot of energy showing that gratitude. And I would have family around often. And so spending time with the family the whole day and just putting all of my attention and energy on my loved ones and my son, you know, that atmosphere, even in my memories when I'm talking about it now, I want to go back to that. It's some of my favorite memories has been on Thanksgiving and feeling that love and that camaraderie and like just carrying that thankfulness inside, which is like a balloon of helium that lifts us from our hearts. And this year I failed. Like, I didn't send anybody any Thanksgiving messages. I didn't attempt to talk to anybody. You know, I didn't talk even much at my buddy's family's house. I mean, it was a good day. My son got to eat. Everybody was happy. We were around family. But usually I spend so much more energy trying to express my gratitude. And I didn't get to do that this year. It makes me think maybe sometimes it's easier to give gratitude in a good place. And when we are struggling and we are suffering and we are dealing with debacles and trials and tribulations, and not to put pity into the equation, but those are all heavy things that tax us. And maybe it's a little bit harder to express gratitude in those moments, not to make an excuse for it. But I love it. I love the idea. I would like to try to make Thanksgiving a daily thing. I would like to give that thankfulness every day and put gratitude into my life every day, which is something that I used to do. It was one of my meditative practices that I maintained, especially in the morning. I would sit and give my gratefuls. Now, what are gratefuls, you might ask? I would sit, and sometimes I would set a timer, but I would sit for approximately like 5-ish minutes, maybe more sometimes. And I would just sit and speak off the top of my head as many things as I could name off that I could be grateful about. And I would sit there and just, I'd say I'd be grateful for my walls sometimes, like literally anything in my vision. You know, I'm grateful for that lamp. I'm grateful for that couch. I'm grateful for that towel. I'm grateful for this floor and the really soft, luscious rug that I can just put my feet on and my toes, and it's really nice. You know, if you start to look around, there's constant material and physical objects that we are always surrounded by that we have the capacity to be grateful for, even if it's silly. So even if you can't think about it, even if you're in like prison, not to say that I would be easily able to express my gratitude in prison, but even in a sparse room with nothing in it, you can still be grateful for the act of breath. You could be grateful for the ability to open your eyes and to see your walls. You know, you could be a blind man in prison and not even know where your walls are, which I would say many of us sleepwalking through society are. But I haven't done my gratefuls in a while. And hearing myself speak right now, I can let you know personally that I am going to reinstitute my gratefuls back into my life. And it's my meditative practice, period. It's good to practice it. Just like anything, even gratefulness is a muscle that you need to practice a little bit. So what am I grateful for? And I kind of like organize these sort of into like, so this is like from a top to the bottom sort of perspective. So at the very top is the most vague and the most existential, and towards the bottom would be the more worldly and more interrelational aspects of how I express my gratitude, sort of. I want to reorganize this again. So at the very top, the heavenly aspect, and I use heavenly in the ancient Chinese perspective of heaven, Whereas heaven is the active force of creation, nature, the movement forward and change and that wild energy that invigorates every bit of life and every bit of passion, that is heaven, the aspect of heaven. And for me, that's just existing. The fact that I'm alive, the fact that reality has made it so that I have this organization of energy and molecules, of little mini micro particles that have somehow worked together, and each specialized cell that can create a tissue, and these tissues that then manufacture organs that do work and metabolize food and oxygen and get rid of all these other byproducts so that my body can be this complex system that can somehow house a consciousness. And what a consciousness is that all these people have been arguing and bickering about, because nobody can even decide what we can even, what we are thinking about and what is thinking. Some people think we're not even thinking, you know, this whole phenomena that allows me to have an opinion in the first place, existence. You know, I am so grateful every day that I exist. I'm grateful that I exist in struggle. I'm grateful that I exist in beauty. I'm grateful that I exist, period. Even if it is for such a short little time, I'm so grateful for that fact. And it's so important. It's so important that you exist. It's so important that your loved ones exist, that your walls exist, that your struggles exist, that your joys and your passions exist. You know, I'm so grateful that you exist. Thank you for existing. Please continue existing. And then right from that point, I feel like I immediately start to go into the earthly realm of material things. And the difference between heaven and earth, heaven is the creative force, earth is receiving. So the way that earth is perpetually there, you know, nature's there. Nature doesn't have to try to be nature. You know, ecosystems don't have to try to be ecosystems. Things just do what they do to exist. I'm going to read a Chuang Tzu line later. Maybe I'll do it now. Fuck it. Yeah, we'll break this up real quick. So this is a Chuang Tzu line that's just called Tao, which I really enjoyed. And I think this kind of expresses what I'm trying to say right here. So this is Tao. Cocks crow, dogs bark. This all men know. Even the wisest cannot tell whence the voices come or explain why dogs bark and cocks crow when they do. Beyond the smallest of the small, there is no measure. Beyond the greatest of the great, there is also no measure. When there is no measure, there is no thing. In this void, you speak of cause or of chance. You speak of things where there is no things. To name a thing is to delimit a thing. When I look beyond the beginning, I find no measure. When I look beyond the end, I find also no measure. When there is no measure, there is no beginning of anything. You speak of cause or chance. You speak of the beginning of something. Does Tao exist? Is it then a thing that exists? Can it non-exist? Is then thing that exists that cannot exist? To name Tao is to name no thing. Tao is not the name of an existent cause and chance. Have no bearing on Tao. Tao is the name that indicates without defining. Tao is beyond words and beyond things. It is not expressed either in a word or in a silence. Where there is no longer word or silence, Tao can be apprehended. Zhuangzi. So, the unapprehendable, the things that we don't reason, is the heavenly aspects of things. And everything that we can reason and mess with is earthly, including the vessel in my thoughts and my consciousness. So even though I am grateful for my existence, I'm not convinced that existing is completely bound to the vessel. And that every bit of life might have this heavenly aspect to it. And underneath the existence, there might be a non-existence. And part of that might be what makes it so beautiful. Maybe. So I'm grateful for continuing to breathe. Every single breath, even the ones we don't think about. Do you think about breathing when you're asleep? Imagine if you actually had to have conscious energy to breathe at all times of the day. Thank nature that I don't. I'm grateful for having my heart still beat. You know, you can forget about your heart for large amounts of time. One of the most difficult times for me when I try to go to sleep, even as a child, is sometimes I'll lay on my chest. And if you lay just right, you can feel your heartbeat against the pillow and it like vibrates your whole body. And I would find it incredibly disturbing. You know, my heart rate often did kind of confuse me. And maybe it was the virility of it and the fact that if that thing stops, you know, all day long, dum, 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 all fucking day long, that thing is pushing blood around and keeping this vessel going. And I don't have to think about it. What a hard working piece of me. I even read recently that the heart muscle doesn't really replace itself. Like, you know how skin cells will replace themselves like every day? Heart muscle is some of the longest existing muscles in the body. And it rarely replaces itself, which is why when you damage your heart muscle or you damage your heart, it can be really hard to get it back functioning again. The heart also happens to have a collection of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, and don't quote me, which is why I'm being so vague, but hundreds of thousands of neurons bound into a semi-cortex that's inside the heart that is then connected to the main cerebral cortex in the brain and the head. But there is a piece of your heart that feels and thinks. And ancient civilizations often thought that heart and mind were the same thing, and that we thought from our chest and we didn't think from our head. That was a modern idea that was instituted by science when we started poking brains. But maybe the neurons and the way that our physical thinking process is distributed throughout the body, maybe it's much more wholesome than many have considered. And what I mean by wholesome is that maybe the whole body is required to have a thinking being, and you could never have a brain in the vat. Maybe the brain and all these particulars and specialized limiting factors of our human reason's ability to label this thing the thinking thing. Maybe part of the no-thing of the body is what thinks as well. Maybe I'm getting confusing. I'm grateful for my vessel and all of its pieces. This means I'm grateful for my hands. I'm grateful for my feet that can hold me on the body and hold me onto the ground. I'm grateful for my legs that hold me up and move me from place to place. I'm grateful for my dexterous fingers that allow me to manipulate my world and do good work and make beautiful things. I'm grateful for my eyes and my nose and my tongue and all my sensing apparatus that allows me to collect information. I'm grateful for my every single piece of me that's working to keep this thing going. Not that things and going are the most important things. I'm grateful for my ability to think and to not think. I'm grateful for my ability to act and to not act. Both these things I put underneath the umbrella of judgment. I'm grateful for my ability to judge actions and my own actions supremely. But judgment, in its most archetypical to me, the ability to judge is the ability to choose when to not do something and when to do something. And thinking and acting are the only somethings that we seem to do. I'm going to bring Chuang Tzu back into this. So this is called the pivot. Tao is obscured when men understand only one of a pair of opposites or concentrate only on a partial aspect of being. Then clear expression also becomes muddled by mere wordplay, affirming this one aspect and denying all the rest. Hence the wrangling of Confucians and Moists. Each denies what the other affirms, and affirms what the other denies. What use is the struggle to set up no against yes and yes against no? Better to abandon this hopeless effort and seek true light. There is nothing that cannot be seen from the standpoint of the not I, and there is nothing which cannot be seen from the standpoint of the I. If I begin by looking at anything from the viewpoints of the not I, then I do not really see it, since it is not I that sees it. If I begin from where I am and see it as I see it, then it may also become possible for me to see it as another sees it. Hence the theory of reversal, that opposites produce each other, depend on each other, and complement each other. However this may be, life is followed by death. Death is followed by life. The possible becomes impossible. The impossible becomes possible. Right turns into wrong and wrong into right, and the flow of life alters circumstances, and thus things themselves are altered in their turn. But disputants continue to affirm and to deny the same things that have always affirmed and denied, ignoring the new aspects of reality presented by the change in conditions. The wise man, therefore, instead of trying to prove this or that point by logical disputation, sees all things in the light of direct institution. It is not imprisoned by the limitations of the eye, for the viewpoints of direct intuition is the thought of both I and not I. Hence he sees that on both sides of every argument there is both right and wrong. He also sees that in the end they are reducible to the same thing, once they are related to the pivot of Tao. When the wise man grasps this pivot, he is the center of the circle, and there he stands while yes and no presume each other around the circumference. The pivot of Tao passes through the center, where all affirmation and denial converge. He who grasps the pivot is at the still point from which all movements and oppositions can be seen in their right relationship. Hence he sees the limitless possibilities of both yes and no. Abandoning all thought of imposing a limit or taking sides, he rests in direct intuition. Therefore I said, better to abandon disputation and seek the true light. Okay, so I know that was a long one. I feel that this has to do with the judgment factor. We're not judging honestly or making good decisions when we're not in that central space where we can see it from my perspective and from outside my perspective. This is what leads to having an ability to think and to act well. Not to say that even people who aren't thinking and acting well aren't doing it. We are. I am. Because a lot of the times I'm not thinking and acting well. So I'm not trying to peg down or talk down to anybody here. But can you imagine not having the ability to think and act freely, which some people don't have? Certain societies, certain cultures, and certain places, people don't have the complete freedom to think and act for themselves, or to choose not to think and to not act. Like, I don't want to do that. Too bad, you got to do it. You know, slave labor. You don't have the choice to not do it, to judge it, good or wrong, or to have an opinion left or right. And I am so grateful that every day, no matter how much pity I heap onto my shoulders, I still have this remarkable free will. Thank you, nature. Thank you, circumstance. I'm so grateful for that. I'm grateful for my choice and freedom in the world, like I just said. I'm grateful for the gift of every new day. And these two I put underneath the umbrella of what I call agency. Agency is your ability as a solitary agent. You are an agent in your world. And an agent is a piece that manipulates and moves things around. You move things around in your world. You move time around. You make choices. You organize your family. You organize yourself. All of this is your facets of being a free agent. And agency comes from having newness, from having new things that you have to figure out and new things that you have to critically construct. You know, these choices make you an agent. Having freedom makes you an agent. So now we're going to get more into the social aspects. I'm grateful for my family. And there's sort of like a tier system, like an almost hierarchical staircase for me. You know, the most important is my son. You know, he's also the one that I end up hurting the most. After my son, I'm grateful for my close family, which includes all my sisters and my mom and dad, who are real close. You know, like we all live in the same house right now. After that's my extended family, you know, my grandpa, grandma, aunts, uncles, you know. I'm so grateful for my extended family. Even if I don't speak to them every day, I'm constantly surprised by how I have an aunt who's like in Norway or something, and she'll hit me up out of the blue every once in a while. And that's blood on the other side of the family thinking about me. And that's amazing. I'm grateful for my friends, which are a type of family to me, especially, and their families. I'm grateful for my work friends, you know, all the people that I work with, that we spend a lot of time with, that we have to depend on because we're making money together. And after that, in the most outwards expanse of my family, I'm grateful for every stranger on this planet. All 7.5 billion human beings actively creating art and living their lives, every single person who's on the other side of my airwaves listening to my voice right now, I'm so grateful for every single human being on the planet. And after that, outside of our species, I'm grateful for nature. I'm grateful for all of the life forms that are existing right now and have their own agency and have their own choices to make, even if it is a bee choosing which flower to pollinate. I'm grateful for my sense joy. And by sense joy, I mean the way that my brain pops when I see something artistic and colorful. The way that I remember smells, because of course I had COVID, so I can't smell anything right. But I remember what it was like to be hit by a smell that would tickle your brainstem and you'd feel it in your spine. And it would inspire memories upon memories of just moments that are attached to those smells. Grateful for tastes, having really good food that's prepared really well, and the textures that exist in that food and on all the surfaces that we could feel with our skins. All of these experiences, they're not in its entirety the point and purpose of reality or even existing, but it's really wonderful to experience these sensations. Love and passion and joy. Love. Ability to love yourself. Love is something you carry inside. Love is something you give to others. Passion in our activities and in these sensations. Joy in existence. These are gifts. Every single little bit of it, when it is squeezed from the limit of life, is wonderfully potent. I'm grateful for my little moments of contentment. Contentment is attached to this old Chinese philosophical term called Wu Wei, I think. I read a version of the I Ching, which pointed out Wu Wei as being like this concept of being fulfilled and unfulfilled. So when you fulfill a task, it's like the action of fulfilling the task makes it unfulfilled, because as soon as you finish something, the necessity and requirement of that finished something is that it starts something else anew, fulfilled and unfulfilled. I've also seen it as non-doing, which non-doing, I think, leads people to judge the concept as almost like a laziness. Like, oh, that means I shouldn't do anything. But for the Taoist Wu Wei, non-action, which another way that I saw it was actionless action, which actionless action has a lot more potency than non-doing or non-action. So actionless action implies a lot of things happening, but without the human force and the human reason behind it. And I think this is the special little bubble where contentment exists, where we can become content when we can drop the feeling that we need to force it to happen. And this is the doing aspect, where sitting back and being part of the environment for a second and stepping out of our unity and our separation and imbuing ourselves into the environment for a little bit and letting the environment happen and being in it, things seem to happen upon their own volition. Not like their own volition, not like you're not doing anything. It takes conscious energy to have actionless action and to perform Wu Wei. I'm sure there is much, much, much more as well. That there are numerous other things that I could be grateful for. I've been going on for quite a while now, but just 5 minutes of that in the morning, you know, you just point out all the things that you can be grateful for. I'm grateful for the redness of bricks. I'm grateful for my pity. I'm grateful for my pity. You know, it's so good, so luscious. But I'm grateful for the colors of these walls. You know, I could do my gratefuls all day when I get into it. It's intoxicating. But I digress. What are the benefits of being grateful? I think it's easier. There's an ease in it. And I think it's healthier too, mentally. According to the greater good, berkeley.edu/article/item, blah, 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 blah. I'll put it in the hotkey of the description for this podcast. Here's a couple little bullet points that I pulled out of their nifty article, which is a good read. I suggest that you look into it if you are interested. But point number one, so what they did is they had three groups of people do gratitude writing for 10 minutes, which is where they would just write down the things that they're happy for, like what I just said out loud, you know, and I'll listen to again when I listen to this. You can do that in writing as well. Writing has been found to be very therapeutic, and, you know, just journaling for 10 minutes a day can organize thoughts and reduce stress levels. So look into it. So they had three groups of people, one group being pro-gratitude, one group talking about negative things, and then one group that didn't write anything at all. And I don't remember how many people they had in the test, but they would come back to these people months after. You know, just like a short little writing test. And 2 to 4 months later, they would still have benefits from what they wrote about and what they were thinking about. So this gratitude writing exercise seems to have a benefit. That's point number one. Point number two, gratitude expressed towards others inwardly, which is like, you know, not even saying it out loud, like, thank you for doing that, but not telling that person. So somebody helps you, you know, and you're a dick. You're not a dick, but you are too shy to say any thank you for somebody who gives you a dollar because you were short at the gas station, you know, and you're like, oh, nod at them, whatever. Even if you say inside your head, like, thank you for doing that. Expressing the gratitude inwardly without ever letting anybody else know that you're grateful or thankful still has an effect. So gratitude writing, never shared with anybody. You could write a letter to somebody and never share it and just express your thankfulness and what they did and never let them know. And there seems to be a marked effect on mental health and happiness and perceived comfort in life just from doing that, which is really interesting. Gratitude accumulates over time. So it showed that people who express gratitude more often, it builds on itself and it makes it easier to show gratitude, which is also attached to all these mental health benefits that I would perceive. Grateful people give more. People who are grateful and who show gratitude give more, are more compassionate. I would even argue that gratitude has a contagious factor, that like kindness and like love, gratitude catches, and that there's a viral gratitude that spreads through society. And the gratitude that you put out, you're able to give more. The people in your life are going to give more because they're being more grateful. And then you get more gratitude back. It's a cycle of, I don't know, what would the opposite of gratitude be? You know, pity, anger, reluctance, ingratitude, not being happy with what is given, not being happy with one's own existence, you know? That sounds like a very dark place. It's a dark place that I inhabited and I built a cabin in, but it's not a place that I want to visit often. I would much rather live in the grateful side of my existence. But So one of the things that I was conflicted by doing this research for this episode, my research with massive scare quotes because it wasn't very dense. At the very beginning, especially, I wanted to get away from this idea of Thanksgiving and get away from thankful and prove that grateful was different than thankful. And to be fair, the nomenclature on this is not clear. I bet you'd be highly disputable for people who do words. But still, I don't think grateful and thankful are direct synonyms. They're very related. Most of what I could find was that gratitude is a blanket term over thankful and grateful. So the fullness factor makes it different than the idea of gratitude, which seems to have the separation from being full of gratefulness, being full of thankfulness. So psychmc.com says thankful is a feeling and grateful is an action. So if it's being an action, so to be thankful is to feel like, oh, I'm so thankful right now. And to be, well, I'm confused. See, I don't get it. So grateful is an action. So the being grateful. So you be grateful and you show thankfulness, according to PsychMC, maybe. Smartleadership.com, smartleadershiphut.com, which is, you know, not the best website. But to be fair, most of the websites that I found for this portrayed gratefulness and thankfulness as direct synonyms. And I had to dig a little bit to show there was a separation, because when we start to bicker about words, we get really lost in these illusions. We're playing the Matrix's games and we haven't even seen the red or the blue pill yet. This is the games that I'm playing. So according to smartleadershiphut.com, grateful is the need for others to be happy. And thankfulness is a happiness that we have alone. So we're thankful for our own situations and we're grateful for what happens to others and what others do to us. Trackinghappiness.com says gratefulness is something that is done for you and thankfulness is a general attitude towards existence. So yet again, this is almost the opposite of what I felt at the beginning, because I felt that thankfulness was like this, oh, thank you. You know, but what is thankful, whereas gratefulness is to hold gratitude inside? I don't know. I don't know what I believe. You could tell me what you believe and you can email me and we can have a discussion about it. But is it harder to show gratitude than it is to show thankfulness? I don't think so. Or the other way around. You know, I guess by the end of this, I'm even more conflicted on what the separation is. But I do believe that there is a slight shimmer of nuance between gratefulness and thankfulness. Are there any downfalls to being grateful or thankful or in gratitude? Think about it. Is there a pitfall? Is there a difficulty that comes with being a grateful person? Is there a downfall to being grateful versus not grateful? Do you feel better not holding gratitude inside? I don't think I have. I've been showing myself a lot of pity lately. I've been beating myself up, and I've been making my life so much harder. And I have a personal relationship with existence, which I refuse to call God. But not having gratitude is spurning existence, this gift, which it is. Whether we like it or not, we're existing, and that's a gift. And it's spurning that gift. Whereas for me, gratitude is taking the gift and holding it close and saying, this hurts right now, but thank nature it hurts. Because not having the chance to have this trip and to learn about why existence is so weird and so strange, having the ability to practice love, I would rather have that chance. And even though the Taoist would say we need to go back to no things and no loves and no, and going back to the void, you know, which is something I guess I'm afraid of, even as I'm expressing it now. And I will go to the void one day. But I could still be grateful for this existence that the void could have birthed, or maybe, I don't know. I'm tying myself in knots. What do you think? What do you think about gratitude? This week, I want you to do, if you feel like it, 2 minutes of gratefuls a day at any time. I like it in the morning because it sets me up right, but maybe after work, give a couple gratefuls on the way to your car. Whatever little walk you have from your car to the grocery store, from your car to the gas tank, just say a couple gratefuls on the way to and from places and let me know what you think and let me know if it helps. I'm going to practice the same thing. I'm going to be doing gratefuls every day from now on again. And I could do a little bit right now. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so grateful that you exist and that you're in my life and that your ears are pointed towards my words. I'm grateful that you're almost at the end of this episode. I'm grateful that I have this opportunity to express myself to you. And I'm grateful that you care. Thank you so much for being you. Continue being you. And I'm so grateful for every new day and every new breath and every new beat that we all take as a species and as a planet. And let's see what happens tomorrow before we all go off into the void. Before I go to O, which he's very excited for his segment today. When he knew that I was recording this morning, he was pumped. He's already come down and bugged me twice. But I have a little poem that I wrote before we go on to him. I wrote this last night thinking about the topic. In a pretty good headspace. Just really short, but here goes. Grateful games gently engrave gracious tendencies directly delay dilemmas catalyzed by cavernous carnivores' envious ego. Cogito ergo sum. All the wants, selfish wanting, much petter replaced by gratitude, with absolutely no faulty fronting, no yes men or women, just sincerity, without the jocular and crude. Have an amazing, amazing week. And here's off to my son, Asko.
Hello, everybody. It's me and Brandon. Not me and Brandon. It's Asko and the ginger man, Brad.
There you go. That was perfect.
So, what's today's question, ginger man?
What is Thanksgiving about?
Thanksgiving's about turkey.
Oh, yeah?
Cranberries.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really quite remember everything
about Thanksgiving. What does it mean to give thanks?
It means thanks for saying, like, thank you for giving the turkey.
Are you ever thankful when you wake up in the morning just to wake up?
Yes.
Are you ever thankful to breathe?
Yes.
Are you thankful for the food you get?
Yes.
How about all the chances for love? Are you thankful for loving?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite thing about loving somebody?
My dad.
Well, that's nice. But what about love in general? What do you like about being able to give love to somebody?
To my dad.
No, anybody else. What does it feel like
Papa.
To give? What does it feel like to give love?
I don't know.
Are you embarrassed?
Yes.
That's fine. Ooh. You want to tell everybody Happy Thanksgiving? Tell them bye-bye.
Happy Thanksgiving! It's Asko and the Ginger Man!
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
and a great week after that. We'll talk to you next Friday.